This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. If you have been waiting for Jazz Fest, your moment to bask in the sun, enjoy great music, and food has finally arrived. We will spice up your taste buds with culinary delights from Brazil. We'll sample a new release from Debbie Davis and the Mesmerizers, and explore the city of New Orleans from a unique perspective. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Everyone knows in New Orleans we live to eat. And as the 45th Annual Jazz and Heritage Festival kicks off this week, the New Orleans Fairgrounds becomes a foodie's paradise. This year, treats from Brazil will spice up your taste buds. And joining me now to talk about these Brazilian delights is Dana Hahn of Carmo Cafe. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you so much.
You are offering typical Brazilian street food as part of the cultural exchange program this year at Jazz Fest. Tell me what's on the menu.
Well, first, we will be offering what's called acarajé. It is really the street portion of our menu. It ranges from Salvador, Bahia in Brazil. You will find it made in the squares and little plazas around that city of Salvador. There are these women in these large, billowy, white gowns that are making something that you don't know until you approach and you see these big vats of red palm oil that are frying these wonderful black-eyed pea fritters, which is cut open and stuffed with something called vatapá, which is a cashew peanut chili shrimp paste topped with salsa fresca, onions, tomatoes, cilantro, and shrimp, and then top it off with some of our Brazilian hot sauce.
Oh, my God.
We also have a vegan version that does not have the dried shrimp in it, so vegans can come out and enjoy their acarajé as well.
Now, I believe I heard you say you use red palm oil.
Yeah, red palm oil in Brazil is known as dendê. It comes from a red palm nut, one of the many species of palm, very common in West African cuisine and in the cuisine of northeastern Brazil. It's a really rich aromatic oil. It's also extremely healthy. So in terms of fried food, you may not find healthier fried food than acarajé.
And you're also offering Brazilian cheese bread.
We are. Pão de queijo, which translates as cheese bread in Brazil, is maybe one of the most common dishes you'll find. It's actually gluten-free. It's made with a cheese from Brazil called queijo de Minas, which is from the state of Minas Gerais, and we were bringing lots and lots of queijo de Minas imported directly from Brazil to make this dish. They're little balls of chewy goodness. They're very dense. They're made with tapioca flour rather than wheat flour.
Does this look more like a dumpling as opposed to a slice of bread?
It's about the diameter of, say, a half dollar. It's kind of round and crunchy on the outside and gooey on the inside. So.
Oh, it sounds delightful.
Yeah.
And your restaurant, Carmo Cafe, is it new to the city?
I would say relatively new, I guess. We've been around coming up on 4 years in May. It started with just my wife and myself, my wife Christina, who is Brazilian. We've grown to about 15 people on our staff now.
And where is your restaurant located?
We're down on Julia Street between Camp and Magazine, so just a couple blocks up from the Children's Museum and a few blocks up from Emeralds, right down the Warehouse District.
And tell me the story. How did you come to open Carmo Cafe?
We had been looking for a space for some time, probably for 3 years before we found the opportunity on Julia Street. We moved down from San Francisco and had also looked for a place there. But, you know, it seems like you can look and look and look, and an opportunity is going to open up when you least expect it. And that's kind of what happened. We're fortunate in that we have some great partners in the building.
And when did your interest in Brazilian food come about?
My wife is from Brazil. We met here. Then we moved back to Brazil in 92. And we were there for about 6.5 years before moving back here. So I was interested in Brazilian food before going to Brazil, but really living there and being kind of blown away by the flavors and the variety. And a lot of what you see represented in the United States and Brazilian restaurants, it doesn't necessarily represent the great diversity of food that you do find in Brazil when you visit.
And what is your hope as you offer the flavors of Brazil to our culinary gumbo?
My hope is that people will, number one, be exposed to some new flavors, and that might pique their interest and inspire them to seek out more flavors and just the culture of Brazil. I think that there are a lot of ways into Brazilian culture, and it is very warm and friendly place. I think people will hopefully go from there once they taste the food and hear some of the music. And
do you hope to become a staple at Jazz Fest?
That would be wonderful. You know, I'm not sure how that happens. There's not a big turnover in vendors, I've noticed, at Jazz Fest. We'll do our best this year, and we'll see what happens.
Dana Hahn of Carmo Cafe, thanks.
Thank you.
You'll find Carmo Cafe's black-eyed pea fritter with shrimp and spicy cashew sauce and the Brazilian cheese bread near the Cultural Exchange Pavilion as Jazz Fest celebrates Brazil. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. I'm Diane Mack. Vocalist and ukulelist Debbie Davis has enchanted audiences with her gift of song. She's a member of the internationally renowned Pfister Sisters, the New Orleans Nightingales, and has performed with a host of notable musicians, taking the sound of her adopted home, New Orleans, around the globe. She's just released a new CD, Linger Till Dawn, with her band, The Mesmerizers. And she joins us now. Debbie, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Diane. It's great to be here.
And congratulations on your new release, Linger Till Dawn. This is your second album, I believe, but the first with your band, The Mesmerizers.
That's correct. My first record was called It's Not the Years, It's the Miles, and it was something of a Busby Berkeley cast of thousands. There were large, almost orchestral pieces. I pretty much put everybody I know and love in town on the record. And this one was a lot more cost effective because there's only four of us. But it's the guys that I've been working with pretty much consistently for the last 2 years. Alex McMurray on guitar and Josh Paxton on piano and my husband Matt Perrine on sousaphone.
And I understand that the album was pretty much a surprise, the result of an impromptu recording session?
It was. I was called by the owner of the legendary and now shuttered Piety Street Studios, Mark Bingham, and asked me if I was doing anything on November 4th. And I said, no, why? He said, well, I've gotten an offer for you to come in and have a day of studio time if you'll let a couple of well-meaning out-of-towners come in and sit in on a session. They won't talk, they won't bother you, but they want to observe a session. And in return, you get the masters of whatever we get down. So I've been playing with the same guys for 2 years. We've got probably 40 songs that are ready to go. So I called them, cleared the date, and we recorded 13 songs in 6.5 hours and had lunch.
That's incredible. Now, how would you describe your style?
A lot of what I do is influenced by American pop music with sort of a lean toward jazz. I don't know what the ukulele brings to it. I'm sure the ukulele does something to besmirch the good name of jazz among the purists in town, but nobody seems to be holding it against me. So that's, I suppose, as good as I can do. Americana, jazz, pop, I guess.
You said you had 40 songs to go. You narrowed it down to 13?
This is music that I like, that audiences seem to like, and the band plays the snot out of it. So,
so for example, what do you sing?
Oh, on the record?
Yes.
Geez, that's a really good question. If only, oh, I do have a copy of it here, so
how about
I can
that?
Cheat. There's a Dinah Washington song. There is a song that was made popular by Louis Prima from The Jungle Book. There's a Hoagy Carmichael classic, a Jelly Roll Morton song, some almost rhythm and blues. There's traditional jazz, a Lou Reed song and a Kinks song, a Beatles song, and a Led Zeppelin song, and a couple of jazz standards. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
You cover a lot of ground.
I tried, yeah.
And you even do little Milton song, Grits and Groceries.
I do. Well, it's a love song about food. In New Orleans, it's practically the same damn thing.
I love you, baby. And if I didn't love you, baby, well then, Grits and Groceries, Eggs and Poultries, and Mona Lisa was a man.
Tell me more about the cuts. Do you have a couple that might be favorites of yours?
I really like how sweet Alex is on If I Fell. I convinced him to sing a duet with me.
If I give my heart to you, I must be sure from the very start that
I knew Alex would be beautiful on it, and he so far surpassed my expectations. Josh Paxton I've known him for a million years. I met him through Little Queenie when he was playing piano for her. And he is a James Booker expert. He's transcribed everything James Booker ever played. He plays it, too.
Now, you're also performing with your husband,
Matt Perrine.
And on the CD, you guys are performing together on Dream a Little Dream of Me.
Yes. A tuba ukulele duet. I hope people will buy the record anyway.
Stars shining bright above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me.
Well, Debbie, you have a beautiful big voice and a personality to match.
Thank you.
Take us back to your roots. How did you come to sing and how did you land in New Orleans?
Both my parents were opera singers and I grew up traveling with them from a very young age. I was born in Manhattan and we left New York when I was 2, but we never really stayed in one place until I was probably 10. I don't think I attended a full year of public school until 4th grade. We spent a lot of time in the car listening to music, so it would be a cross between listening to whatever opera they were learning. So I'd hear the first act of The Marriage of Figaro 11 times in a day. And then we'd listen to The Sons of the Pioneers, which was a cowboy swing group that started in the 30s that I fell in love with because I got exposed to it. My parents loved it, but it's 4- and 5-part harmony, which I think is part of what allowed me to slide into the Pfister Sisters so seamlessly, was because I had all this harmony parts in my head. I learned to sing listening to opera and harmony singers. Somewhere in between there is something of what I do, I guess. And I came to New Orleans on a road trip in 1997 with a friend of mine who was moving to Colorado. And it was only 700 or 800 miles out of the way, so we decided to come down and didn't realize we were coming down during the second weekend of Jazz Fest. We got a hotel in what I am now aware is absolutely the heart of the ghetto on Tulane Avenue. We didn't know enough to be terrified by where we were staying. And we went to the Jazz Fest the second Thursday, and I saw a guy playing upright bass with a traditional jazz band, which I now know as Tim Laughlin, who is a good friend of mine, in the Economy Hall tent. And I was thunderstruck when I saw him. And so when we saw him the next day playing electric bass in the jazz tent, I went over and introduced myself. And we were married the following fall.
What a great story.
Yeah, I sunk the hook in his cheek as hard as I could and yanked him into the boat before he knew what was happening.
Your star continues to rise, evident by how busy you are lately.
I'm doing a tribute to Randy Newman with Tom McDermott and Bonnie Gibson, and I'm doing performances with Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes and Paul Sanchez and the New Orleans Nightingales and the Pfister Sisters, and I'm doing stuff with my own group too.
You are also performing, I believe, at Jazz Fest.
Yes, I am. I'm performing with a group that has only performed a handful of times. I'm almost embarrassed to say how few times, but apparently we struck a chord enough to get a Jazz Fest gig. It's a group called the Glorioskis, and it's Helen Gillet, myself, and Mishkin, who used to live here, who was one of the most prolific songwriters until she moved. She now lives in Joshua Tree. So the three of us are doing two gigs during Jazz Fest, both on May 2nd. One is at the fairgrounds and the other one's at the Always Lounge.
What are your thoughts as you enjoy your success?
I feel incredibly fortunate that I work with people that I want to work with. And I feel like there's much more to do.
Well, Debbie, congrats on the CD.
Thank you so much, Diane.
And thanks for stopping by.
Debbie Davis and the Mesmerizers' new CD is Linger Till Dawn. There will be a release party Monday, April 28th at DBA, 618 Frenchman Street, from 5 to 7 p.m. More info at DebbieDavisMusic.com. As you make your way across the fairgrounds, photography by Sterling Barrett may catch your eye in the contemporary crafts area. The native New Orleanian highlights the beauty of this city and its architecture in a unique way using photographic collage. And he's here to talk about his technique. Sterling, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Hi, Diane. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, congratulations on your latest works. Where did the inspiration come from for your photographic style?
My style was born out of a love for New Orleans and the architecture especially. When I started in 2006, I was looking for a new way to portray the city through photography because we have so many amazing photographers that permeate New Orleans. And my style is 200 to 500 individual images that are collaged back together for a final composition. So I basically photograph the subject in small sections and then put it back together. So the photos are actually of one subject. And what it unleashes is a really interesting understanding of perspective and line within the image and creates some really interesting juxtapositions between the sky or the architecture around it. And I'm happy to say that people have grasped onto it and really enjoyed it.
Now, you said 2006. This was just after Hurricane Katrina?
Yeah, it was right after Hurricane Katrina. I, at the time, was actually still in high school and really studying photography in the darkroom and loving that side of it, but wanted to be more digital and get in the digital realm because most of my work is digital. And it was a way to portray the rebirth of the city that was interesting, and nobody had looked at photography, especially of our architecture, in such a way before.
They have a sort of three-dimensional quality to them. They're a little disorienting and at the same time quite inviting. What's going on there?
There's about 200 to 500 individual images that go into each piece, and I'm shooting over a single day or one or two days, and I change aperture and perspective, so some images are darker or the perspective's a little different, a little shallower, and then they're all collaged back together for the final composition, so it gives this really interesting mosaic kind of quality to the work, and then the sky is usually photographed on a different day, so it adds this even more surreal additive of, because we have these amazing clouds in New Orleans, it's without doubt. It celebrates the architecture along with putting it in a new light, a new depth and perspective to the work that most people really are drawn to.
So what is it that catches your eye when you're looking for subject matter?
We are really lucky to have so many diverse types of architecture in Louisiana and New Orleans in particular. And sometimes it's just the way that the colors interact with their surroundings or how the home would lend itself to the work. So it's really kind of just inspiration as it comes upon me in that area.
Now, yours are giclée prints?
Everything's a giclée, so it's all printed archival on 100% cotton rag paper, and everything's limited edition.
And what exactly is a giclée print?
It's pigment-based inks sprayed onto a paper, so it's an inkjet kind of printing process. Basically, archival quality prints.
Now, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who was your mentor?
I had so many mentors. Barry Kaiser, who taught me at Country Day when I was in high school, was really instrumental in helping me develop an understanding of photography and then understanding what my style was within New Orleans photography.
Yeah. Well, what's it like to see your work at Jazz Fest now?
It's surreal because it's what you want to do when you decide you're going to start showing your art. It's a great outlet, creative outlet.
Surreal, like your work.
A little bit.
So you were still in high school when you began to develop this technique.
Yeah, definitely. Mary Fitzpatrick, who just now passed away from us, the director of the PRC, had put me on the cover of New Orleans Favorite Shotguns when I was in high school, a coffee table book around the city. And it was a really kind of a jumping off point that it was like, okay, I can really do this. And people are starting respecting it. So I owe her so much for that. But it was, it started in high school and continued through college. And then I had gone to college for creative advertising, actually, and fine art photography and printmaking. And I decided to come back and pursue it full time.
You were in Dallas?
Yeah, I went to Meadows School of the Arts in Dallas, Texas for 4 years. Really enjoyed my time up there, but it took me, kind of clichely, leaving New Orleans to realize what I had actually missed.
Homesick.
Yeah, definitely.
So tell me, what are we likely to see at Jazz Fest?
First off, at Jazz Fest is one of the few times a year where I frame all my art in salvaged cypress. So it's 300-year-old cypress that I have custom milled, and it becomes the frames for most of the work. And it's the only time of year you can get the work in those frames. And then we'll have a variety of images from Brooklyn Bridge to Jackson Square to Creole cottages and two-story shotguns. It's a variety of work.
So the architecture has character, just like the people.
Yes, we have a layered history with so many colorful people and places, and we all connect through this rhythm and ritual, and Jazz Fest is definitely part of that ritual, and I'm hoping to create artwork that just signifies that. I hope to continue growing and represent New Orleans on a level outside of New Orleans. We're so much more than Bourbon Street.
So you're home to stay.
I'm home to stay. I'm not going anywhere. That is for sure.
Well, Sterling, thanks, and see you at the fest.
Thank you so much for having me.
You'll find the works of photographer Sterling Barrett in the Contemporary Crafts area, Gallery F, at Jazz Fest this weekend. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.